Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Good morning once again, and this is Coach Chuck Creasy with another week of American Tennis. This is the UR Tennis Network. Please call in today if you'd like to talk to our guest or to add any comments. Our number is 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. This is the UR Tennis Network. Look at my blog, chuckcreasy.net. Look at the blog. You get all of the UR Tennis Network shows that we have had over the past 2 years, and each one is described, so you can go right there and listen to each and every show. Folks, we have got a very, very special guest today, and he only has a half hour. And so I am going to cut the introductions a little bit short. We'll come back and talk more about the things we normally do. But I wanted to say that Dr. Jim Poole was on our show January 2nd, and it was one of the most well-received shows that we have had. We've had several of our listeners talk about what they learned from the show, and it was a very, very, as numbers go, one of the highest listened to shows we've had. But Dr. Poole, I know, is on the line. Dr. Poole, you're there, aren't you?
Yes, Coach. How you doing today?
Great. I'm great. And Dr. Poole, I just got to set the table a little bit, and then I'm going to let you go here and let you talk. We want to listen to you. It's just extremely fascinating. Your field, you are a pediatrician by trade, and you've treated over 60,000 children in the state of North Carolina. But recently, in the last 5 to 10 years, you've come up with your program that's called Fast Brain, FastBrain.com, FastBrain.com, where you have put a positive spin on what everybody refers to as ADD, ADHD, learning deficits, learning problems, troubled kids. All of these things that we've been doping our kids up with and over-drugging them, and I'm trying to get an attention getter for the folks listening out there because, you know, about, it's been 10 to 15 years ago, you had me to read a book called the Edison Gene, and that was the first time I'd seen the best spin I've ever seen on ADD and things. But you basically treat kids with music, diet, exercise, counseling, but mainly you treat them with a good, healthy self-esteem, and you help them to look at their problem differently. Dr. Poole, we've been doing now 4 straight weeks on the motivation deficit of our youth in America, and I think anybody that looks at USA in our educational programs, our sports programs, our learning programs, they'll say that yes, we do have a deficit in motivation. That's why I've asked you to come on today. I would like to get your thoughts on this, and also to be able to talk about fast brain, because I just am tired. Daggone it, Dr. Poole, I'm tired of dumbing kids down and not speaking to the king and the queen in them. So welcome to the program the second time. Again, January 2nd, 2013, folks. Go back and listen to the first program. But Dr. Poole, welcome back, and thanks. And can you, that's your lead in there. Can you talk about, do we have a motivational problem with our youth, and what are we doing? What are we doing wrong, and maybe some of the things we're doing right? Go ahead.
Well, thanks, Coach, and I appreciate you having me on. And as an aside, I've known Coach Greasy for a long time as being a tremendous motivator of people, and I've seen kids under him get very frustrated and walk away and then come back the next week or month or years later going, you know, I need you. And so I appreciate what you've done for all the people and the youth of today. And I will say that I think, Eric, if I look back on your coaching career, most, if not all, the tennis players that have played under you have become successful not only in business but as people. And I think that's a testimony to hard motivation and tough love and the stuff that you give, Coach. So I want to thank you
very much. Appreciate it.
My spin has been that I'm ADD and I'm all over the place, and I realize that physicians, if you're lucky in pediatric 3-year pediatric residency after medical school, you might have 1 month of training in behavioral health. And I was fortunate enough in my Army training to have a lot of it, and it was a real eye-opener. One is to the problem, and this was many, many years ago, and the issue is really the problem of what do we do about it. Initially, ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, was named MBD, or minimal brain dysfunction, and I'm going the whole different other route. I'm going to say that I was invited not long ago by an Ivy League school to come up and be with a neuroscientist and to be on his scientific board to review data. And then the data was to review a program that actually slowed the brain thinking down so that the child could sit and read. And the poor kids, I'm already conditioned you to my response, but the poor kids were having to sit in front of a TV screen, computer screen, for 40 minutes after school, first, second, and third graders, and stare at the slow-moving butterfly changing colors or carrying certain items and click on it when certain things happen. And the idea is if we can slow their brain down there, we can slow them down for reading. And the next day was the Kentucky Derby. And what I saw when I was with a big group and we were talking about fast brain and stuff, I said, they're my patients. And what happened was is the Kentucky Derby, the horses, they were off. And I said, what do we want that last place horse to do? And one of the guys laughed, and he said, well, I want that horse to run faster because my money's on it. And I said, exactly. And turns out that horse came around and won. But why do we have the hedges? To keep the horses in the line and on the racetrack. But the horse has the freedom to go wide, go narrow, go close to the rail, maneuver, find his own pace. And the jockey is along helping the horse do that. And then we teach, and people would say, let the horse run. And then the horse knows how to go for that finish line. And that's exactly what we want to do as people and business. We want to find our pace. We want to find out what we do best. We want to be able to make mistakes, go wide, maybe be pulled in. We want to maneuver. and then we want to race for the finish line. And I think that, in essence, is the difference between the way I feel who we are and what a big segment of the population is and how we react versus we don't all have to be sitting in a chair still because that's not our makeup. So I think that's a nutshell.
Dr. Poole, your program, the reason that I've always had so much respect and I am so, I love so much what you teach is your program teaches freedom. It teaches freedom of the spirit, freedom of the heart. Now, you did say that horses have fences. They have railings, but they are not boxed into a cage. But I see all of our rules, all of our laws, all of our systems that we're coming up with, they basically box kids in to a cage. They box people into a cage. And, you know, it is really, really frustrating to me that we don't speak to the king and the queen and stretch our kids. The USTA I've just gotten onto some of the rules committees and things, and I'm finding out that a lot of people find comfort as administrators in giving people fences and systems. Can you talk to this a little bit? What are you finding in the school systems and things there in North Carolina and wherever you go around the country? Am I on track here? Am I right?
I'm afraid you are. I have 4,000 ADD patients, and I'm from now on going to call them fast brain patients. We don't even use the term attention deficit in our system because our kids can play video games for 1, 2, or 3 hours, so they have the ability to focus. And the reason they can focus on the video game is because it's fast, it's changing, it's speed, it's visual, they can move around, they can pause it. Did you know that you can fail a video game 6 times and still win and everybody around you will give you high fives? I look at the video game Angry Birds. And when I'm giving talks to parents, everybody's played Angry Birds. And, you know, the kids say, you know, everybody loses at Angry Birds at some point, and everybody wins at Angry Birds at some point. And it happens to be the number one or two downloaded games because of that. And yet in the school system, if you make a C or a D, you're labeled a C or a D student, and that follows you the whole rest of your life.
But it goes further because, Coach, or
go ahead.
Well, it goes further. We're giving kids A's and B's so they don't get C's and D's a lot, too, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting, though.
That's exactly right. You know, we started, my wife got on me early with our boys, and then she later understood why, that we started the Salvation Army, and everybody gets a trophy, and nobody is singled out for being special. And all of a sudden, sometime in one's life, everybody doesn't get that trophy. And then how do they deal with that? And when we're dumbing people down, as you call it, I just call it, we want to motivate kids, but we're telling them it's okay if you didn't do so good. And in my three boys, it was okay that you didn't do so good, only if you were trying harder to do better next time. Mistakes, we all learn from mistakes, but mistakes are not something to sit back and say that's okay. I was listening to something not long ago, and it was talking about the Constitution says that we're all created equal, and I was agreeing with that. And then they said, but, you know, it doesn't say that we're all equal. And I think that was a fascinating statement. We are created equal, but we're not equal. And when we're trying to say that it's okay to be not like Susie, or if they're a tennis player or if they're a basketball player, oh, you didn't do so good, and that's okay. That is not instilling a motivation into anybody. And I think the problem is not the dumbing down, Coach. I think it's that we haven't figured out how to motivate our kids properly. The old days where we screamed and yelled at them to try to motivate them, what we were doing was getting their attention. But we've got to find a way to motivate them to want to do better, not to be part of the mediocre crowd. And that therein lies the difficulty.
Okay, there's an article, a great article, New York Times, actually, and I don't usually give them much credit, but if you could go to September 24th this year, there's an article actually losing is good for you. And it's addressing a guy out of Los Angeles, Ashley Merriman, wrote this article. If you folks want to look this up, losing is good for you. And it addresses just that, this, that we have propped our kids up with fake confidence. Kids are smart. We've told them they're good, they're good, they're good so many times on the other extreme that they really, they know when they're good and when they're not good. But again, here's what I see that's deeper than that, Dr. Poole. What I see that's deeper than that is we treat kids like they're dumb. We treat kids like, hey, we're going to manipulate you. We're going to put you in a box. We're going to treat you like you are dumb and try to decide how you're going to react to this situation. And we're like programming the kids. I that's the problem. You know, do you have thoughts on that?
We as teachers and we as parents don't realize that we're doing that. We think that by making our child happy is that that's the number one thing. I gave a talk actually last night to 60 parents, and I said, what do we want for our children? And either the number one or the number two thing that comes out every time is for our child to be happy. Us guys want them more successful than the moms want them to be happy. But I would have to beg, the question is, can you make me happy? And even Coach Creasy, can you make me happy or can you make me sad? The answer is no. I respond to what you say. So my happiness or my sadness is in response to what you've said or done. And so it all has to come from inside. So my parents cannot give me self-esteem. You can take it away, but by saying, and you telling me, okay, Jim, I know you can hit a forehand, that doesn't allow me to hit a forehand. I've got to go out and practice and mentally let my brain do what it wants to do and what it was made to do. And I need to learn that by going over and over. And that, by failing to hit the forehand in the court, my brain learns the technique. Because if I do X, Y, and Z, now the ball is going in, but I got to have the freedom to do that. Are we in the classroom allowing the kids to fail and then support them? I look at kind of what you're saying when we talk about, I see athletes all the time that can't play a sport because the grades are down. Well, the school system's got a great way of dealing with that. Well, we just won't let you play and we'll kick you out. What's wrong with those kids going to a special study hall and pulling their grades up and then being allowed to play? That would motivate me. That would motivate these kids that aren't being able to play. And it's the video game. Why is it that we even give C's and D's? And we talk about grades. I'm up for C's and D's. But I always talk about in med school, they came across with this different idea in medical school. And the idea is that you're supposed to learn it. And it doesn't matter how many times you go over it. You got to go over it till you know it. And you see it, you do it, you teach it. And when you can teach it, you know it. So that to me is a big, big deal. Go ahead.
No, I was going to, you know, you make me think, you know, my mother, what a great philosopher she was, you know, just unbelievable. I always quote her. I got my loaded language started, I think, a lot with her. But one time I said, Mom, I just want to be happy. She said, bull crap, you know, she said the BS word. She said, BS, Charles. Nobody ever promised you happiness. She said, you search for peace and joy, peace of your inner soul, knowing that you're doing the right thing and you're pleasing to God. Joy in that you will get that inner peace. Happy is just like a thermometer that goes up and down according to the changing weather. You're happy or not, you're happy or not, you're sad or not. Jim, it's exactly what you are talking about here. And we preach to the kids so much now that, you know, I'm starting to do this. It's more important what happens in you than what happens to you. Caller, we've getting callers already here. I want to hold on toward the end here, and if you caller could just hang on, and we'll get you to a question with Dr. Poole here in a few minutes. But go a little further now into the ADD, how we label kids. We put them basically in a box, and we drug them. And I know that you, in some situations you have to use medication, but it looks like the pharmaceutical companies maybe made this disease up or something. Is that true, or has it always been here, or is it we just now found a pill we could give to it? What's the real truth on it, Dr. Poole?
It's always been here. America was founded by social outcasts, religious zealots, prisoners that were given freedom to come, explorers, even, you know, Daniel Boone, he didn't think there was enough space in North Carolina, so he had to go hiking off into Tennessee, and, you know, Lewis and Clark head off west. It's what made America are people that are, they're out there. They're taking risks, and then the risks are rewarded. And the risks, we've always rewarded the risk taker, and we allow them to go and do that. Our economy, as we built up and became in the Industrial Revolution, we rewarded the risk taker. When you stop taking that risk taker and you disincentivize them, or you quit rewarding them, now we're in trouble. And if you say, so what are we doing? Are we giving drugs? Well, the problem is, in the last 10 to 15 years, we're saying that you've got to sit in a classroom and sit there and study and take an hour class. And I want to know, where's the study that said a class should go on for an hour? I'm working with a Princeton electrical engineer, head of the department. Meng Chang has found out a new way of doing video analysis of how you learn. And we're looking at very much trying to say, okay, if we can learn, you know, if I were to read a book to you about polar bears, or have you see a Smithsonian video on polar bears, which would you learn more? Everybody say, oh, the video, of course. Why aren't we teaching that way? If I could teach you in 10-minute intervals, would you learn that better, or in a 90-minute didactic lesson? Well, 10-minute intervals, because, you know, you only have 90 seconds to keep somebody's attention. I think that we've gotten to where we've gotten away with how we used to learn. School in the old days, you came in early in the morning, you had a break mid-morning, you had a break at lunchtime normally, you went outside and got activity going, and all those things happened. We're doing away with all that. That's interfering. Plus, there are just more fast-brain ADD folks out there now. We have processed foods. Everybody should, I've not met the cardiologist who I think the name of the book is The Wheat Belly. In 1985, we started genetically altering wheat, and all of a sudden America started getting fat, and people are getting off wheat and gluten, and it's changing their emotional abilities. We know probiotics can change obsessive compulsive disease folks, and just helping the normal nutrition. So I think what we're doing, Chuck, is going, what we're with Fast Brain, we're trying to say a proper diet, a proper nutrition, proper exercise. Did you know that playing music allows you to focus? I have studied music, and when we say, well, you got to be quiet taking a test, I wish somebody would send me the study that proved that, because I have proven that playing music, upbeat, fun music, actually will increase your ability to do well on a test. And I have now parents doing it at home. I've got teachers and schools doing it with some remarkable success. So what we're using is these techniques to say, okay, what is the brain made to do? It's made to go fast. It's made to jump from one thing to another. Let's teach that way. Let's act that way. And then we can succeed. And, yes, there are analytical people in the world. My middle son's very analytical. He took Hebrew 1 and 2. He's in the seminary. He took it at the same time and aced it. Me as Fast Brain could not even come close to doing that. But I'm out there doing risk-taking things, and I need to be rewarded for what I'm doing and he for what he is doing. And that's where we get into motivating. The motivation comes to the analytical person, because the analytical people are making up the rules. We just need to change that a little bit, and I think we'll be fine.
I love what you're saying there. It's exactly, I'm always looking for the reason why. I see tennis dumbed down so much. I see all the rules, too much analysis, paralysis by analysis over and over and over. Everything's done by computers. Everything's done by a system. So you're saying the analytical people are given, are now being given the responsibility to motivate, and that's completely wrong. I've always believed that is wrong. You know, so I wanted to ask you real quick, how fast is the brain? You've talked often about this. This is fascinating. We should not, we shouldn't teach our kids slow. We should speed things up, speed them in everything they do, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the kids that can tolerate that. Watch a video game, Chuck. We've all watched kids play video games. And if you've tried do a video game with your child, their thumbs and their minds and their eyes, they're going, watch out, because they know what's about to happen. And you're going, what? Boom, your car blows up or whatever it is. Yeah, the speed of the brain is absolutely phenomenal. And so we're trying to slow the brain down. The brain's not meant that to do that. The brain is meant to go fast. And when I can teach kids speed, why do we've all been amazed at people that could speed read. And so how can they speed read? And how can the athlete, how can a pro athlete drop back in 3 seconds, find somebody over the middle, 40 yards down, reading his defense when he's got 325-pound linemen really trying to knock his block off? All within 3 seconds, and you can't be analytical. You've got to be able to see. You've got to have the hedges. You've got to have the lines to be in. So I'm not saying devoid of rules. I am saying though that we need to work within those rules so that we can exactly figure out how I respond. I'm going to respond differently than an analytical attorney who sits back in the room and reads the contracts. We need those people. But we also need the person who's going to be out front trying the new thing. And that's what Edison did. I mean, Edison tried the light bulb 1,000 different ways. So that's where we need to find the reward, I think, Coach. And that's where it's not everybody, but those of us that are made differently, we need to we need to say, hey, that's a risk. That was great. In school, if you go into the first grade and you ask everybody how many's an artist, everybody will raise their hand. Go into the fifth grade class, how many are an artist, and maybe one will raise their hand. What happened to them all? They were told they weren't good enough is what they were told. That's exactly what they were told. And there's a great study that was done, and I think I saw it on a TED Talk, but what they did is they took CEOs and they gave them like toothpicks, and they gave them a marshmallow, and you had to see how high of a tower you could build and put the marshmallow on top. And then they gave it to first to second graders. And I know I'm not getting this exactly right, but did you know the CEOs in the room could not do it as well as the first and second graders because the CEOs were bound by what they thought were the rules of the road, and the kindergarten people didn't have a box. So we don't even have a box. We think outside the box. And that's the concept, I think, in a nutshell there.
Well, I'm wondering if this is why we're losing so many children in tennis. The statistics are staggering about the amount that start tennis and the amount that are playing 10 years later. It just is awful how many quit, and it might be that we have too many rules, too many boundaries, too many things, and we're not letting people have the freedom, which I always preach. So I've got one question. You got time for a question, Dr. Poole, real quick?
I've got about 5 more minutes if you need me.
Okay, great. I've got a caller here, area code 347-515. Do you have a question for Dr. Poole today? Are you there, caller? Okay, caller dropped off. Okay. Dr. Poole, you know, this is the thing that I always, what's fascinating, I love that you can to tell us these things and direct us in this direction, because it's not all neat, clean, and wrapped up in a in a perfect system, but I think you hit everything when you said analytical people should probably not be in charge of motivation. They should be charged of taking care. You should probably motivate first, and then they should take care of the, I heard one time leaders do right, managers do things right, but leaders do right things. And, you know, that's a quote from a book many, many years ago, I think, that I read. But let me ask you one more question, and then is it true Thomas Edison didn't have clock? I heard he didn't have a clock or watches in his laboratory.
That's right. That's what I've heard. And, you know, and Coach, we do need the rules. We do need to work within certain confines. But just like our racehorse, we need to give that racehorse the ability to go. We wonder why once the kids get into college and they get out in the workforce, they don't have all that go get them in imagination. And it's because we're taking it away from them, and we're not saying, hey, that looks good. And again, you still got to work within that. But that motivation is a wonderful concept of, okay, can I motivate kids by telling them that they're okay? And the answer is no. They've got to prove it themselves. We've got to give them the tools to allow them to experience that inner success. And when you pull up Fast Brain, it's with two eyes, and, you know, get on our website. We'd love for you to do that. But we have teachers. I've got educators in my office, because teachers need to learn that. Teachers are overworked, underpaid, and have way too many kids in their
classroom. Many restrictions from the government.
Too many
restrictions. There's no child left behind. And all of that courses and all those things that they're just dumbing kids down. But Dr. Poole, I cannot thank you enough. I want to get you on again. I just want to keep investigating this. And folks, it's fastbrain.com, BRAIIN.com. And Dr. Poole, I just can't thank you enough. And everybody out there is tennis player with ADD. We got great hope, you know, ahead. So we'll be right back.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Made in America. This is American Tennis every week at 12 to 1 Eastern Time on the UR Tennis Network. That's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S. You can call in today at 714-583-6853. See each and every show that we've done for American Tennis on American Tennis at chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E.net. T3Mentorship.com is where you can find my videos and some of my instructional programs. We would like to thank Dr. Jim Poole again for just being on the first half of the show today. Dr. Poole's website is fastbrain.com, B-R-A-I-I-N.com. It's extremely fascinating because this is really, really, I believe, the solution to many of the problems that we have with motivation, not just with tennis players, but with our youth in the United States. Our mission on American Tennis is to have each and every one of you stand up and to speak out and say those things that are opinions. Feelings and needs are tough, but go past the cliches and facts. Go to the opinions and get them on the table. And if you'll stay professional, address issues, not people, no one can find fault. It is your duty, our duty at American Tennis to right this ship. And we are doing some wonderful things. We have some great things happening in American Tennis and fantastic people. Fantastic people. I'm just salute to the Scott Schultzes and, the Jose Higuereses and the Jay Bergers and all of the Patrick McEnroe, who has some great statistics about how many women are really coming up. The women, I've always known and believed that women can get to a certain level quicker than most guys because, you know, so much of it has to do with movement. And if you can address the movement issues and the shot selection issues, you can get women to a higher level quicker. But it takes a lot longer, you know, maybe on the men's side. The games are, you know, there's 15 different things. But we are showing some great, great moves. As far as a lot of our women, now I think we have 13 in the top 100 in U.S. Open. Actually, as we only had Serena come through all the groups, we have many, many that are in striking distance. I'd ask you to go back to my radio show. A few weeks back, we had Brian Minton on the phone, and Brian Minton talked about Shelby Rogers, who is now top 120 in the world, and talks about her whole progression from 8 to 18 and everything that he did with her to help bring her game along. Go to chuckcreasy.net, click on the archives of American Tennis. You'll see them on the blog. Just go to the blog and click on. You can get each and every show, but Brian Minton's shows was fantastic. Also, Brian Gottfried. We had Brian Gottfried on 4 weeks. It was great. We're continuing to talk about the American deficiency and motivation of our youth. Go to the Bob Verdun show and go to the Jim McCready show last week. They were all very, very good shows and just a whole lot of great information for you folks listening out there. Remember that Edmund Burke said that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good women to do nothing. You know, our job, our duty, our calling is to stand up and speak out. And don't wait for those people in charge to do everything, folks. Do not wait for the people in charge because they're handcuffed as well. With as many good people as we have trying to right the ship, bureaucracies basically always get into the way. A bureaucracy is just like a slow moving ocean liner that, and you have probably a pea shooter of a steering wheel trying to turn it. You know, you cannot turn a bureaucracy once it gets cranked up. And my golly, are we finding this out in our government right now. But the people who work for the USDA, the people who work for the NCAA, the people who work for the ITA, the MDTA, all of these organizations, the people who work for them are daggone good people. They want to do the right thing. They're trying to do the right thing. They have the process in order to do the right things. But we get hogtied by the bureaucracy and the whole machinery of it. I'd love Dr. Jim Poole's show on Fast Brain, because we need the Fast Brain people out leading the charges and doing the motivation. And probably the half hour that he was on, folks, the best thing that he said was he said that we don't need the analytical people in motivation. And I got a clip from Andia Mayberry that I used to play earlier, but I said the people who are behind the desk with computers need to be compiling stats, but they do not need to be making policy. Computers have allowed Barney to run Mayberry. We need Andy. We need Andy Griffin, the common sense, right brain people who are the people who are the creative people, the fast brain people, to be out there motivating and seeing the way, and then we need the analytical people to probably be doing what they do. I'd like to go at this point now and try to go over the eight situations or the eight proposals that I'm in the process of making to USTA, and I've brought these up on some of the committees already, and really have only gotten to bring one to the floor, but I'd like to go over these. And if you have comments, call in today, UR Tennis Network at 714-583-6853, and see if you can call in if you want to make some comments. But proposal number one, let me go into these. And I started these a couple weeks ago, but I want to go into these. Proposal number one, the biggest thing I said is we must go back to traditional scoring systems. Two out of three complete sets, play complete matches, especially for our kids in the 16 and the 18 and under age groups. Now, these age groups are performance priority age groups. That the priority should be for 80% of our kids or more should be for performance at these age groups. Well, why else would they be playing tennis? They may be on a high school team. But the point is performance, they should be trying to break out of the pack. I believe that we keep our kids in participation priority age groups for too long. The participation age groups maybe are the 10s, 12s. And, you know, nobody's going to find fault with having a lot of kids involved with campus draws, with multiple matches, team competitions, and these things in participation age groups. But daggone it, when it gets up to the higher age groups, we need to have a system where the cream is allowed to rise. So for proposal one, let's play full matches in our performance priority age groups. Proposal number two, return to the head-to-head system for evaluation of tournaments and rankings. Wow. We thought we were smart, and it looks so good to have this point system where kids go to tournaments and they get points. And, wow, they'll just jump out of their skin and play more and more and more and just try to get points. And, therefore, in getting the points, they're going to move forward as well. So what has happened? Actually, there's about three things that have happened that have been crippling. First of all, the point system with the child themselves, the child, there's no consequences for losing. There is only reward for winning. And that there is no consequence for losing, the child does not have a doggone healthy disdain, healthy dislike. Let's say dislike for losing. And the thing that separates the players at the performance age groups is that they absolutely hate losing more than the next kid. If the kids can tolerate losing, they'll usually sit in the level where they are. I always had a statement that I've made for many years, and I've always said you only win to the level that you cannot stand losing down to. And when you dislike losing enough, you learn how to win. So really, the head-to-head system used to do this. It created rivalries. Kids would travel to find other tournaments where some kids were in where they wanted to go head-to-head. Now the kids will go to tournaments that just are called L1s, L2, L3s. They don't go to try to win a title. They don't try to go win a Crackerland tournament or a Peach State tournament or a Gator Bowl tournament or a Pepsi 16 tournament in Florence, South Carolina. These were all used to be great, great events, very, very competitive events, where it brought the competitive juices to the top in most of our kids. Now we have kids at our most prestigious events like Kalamazoo pulling out of the back draws and dumping fake injuries and just pulling out because they don't want to maybe, they don't see the benefit of trying to work through a back draw event. In the old days, and old, remember folks, old school is not old fashioned. There's a lot of things we didn't need to dump, but one of the things we did not need to dump is the 2 out of 3 sets in the back draw of things like Kalamazoo and make the rivalry be a huge thing that really the kids fought to try to protect, and they fought to try to gain ground through the rivalries. Now, here's the big thing also. This is what troubles me the most on the head-to-head system. Entrepreneurs are in the ground troops of our tennis system, our tennis USTA system, our ground troops, those people who are volunteers who are trying to motivate kids and who are trying to run tournaments. With this point system that they have cut off the legs of these greatest entrepreneurs who have created great tournaments and great events, and they have delegated from top down, yes, you can have this level of an event. Your event does not have USTA specifications on this or this or this or this, therefore you can be a level 3, or you can be a level 5, or you can be a level... And what has happened, our ground troops are saying, whoa, wait a minute, you stick your nose into my business too much, you're delegating how what we can do and how to do it. You know, it's just not as important to me as it was when I was doing the work and I was creating the energy. So again, returning to the head-to-head system probably should be the first thing that we do. But proposal, that's proposal 2. I only put proposal 1 out there because winning 2 out of 3 sets is at the source a not a dumb down. Proposal number 3, full doubles matches should take priority, especially in the performance age group, 16s and 18s, over back draws, over consolation events, full doubles matches. Did you know that 8-game pro sets are not a rule of tennis? In anywhere, in any book, they are not a rule of tennis. 10-point tiebreakers for the third set are not a rule of tennis. No ad scoring is not a rule of tennis. These are things that we need to consider and probably dump them. Again, administrators and the people who are making the rules are the people, you know, who should not, we should not have the analytical people making these rules because they are not on the front lines. Proposal number four. Again, I wanted to go back to the importance of having participation-centered and performance-centered priorities. If we could start with that and people would look at this as a base of how they put things together, what do you want to accomplish? If we want participation, we should make a multiple draw tournament and maybe some compass events and do these things. But if it is a performance-driven event, remember, coaches, parents, players out there, that you only are motivated if winning feels really, really good and losing hurts a lot. If winning sort of feels good and losing doesn't hurt that bad, you're going to sit on the same level that you are for a long, long time. So it's incredibly important that we discern and define the difference between participation events and participation-centered and performance-centered. Proposal number 5. This is the one that really, really is just should be a no-brainer the way we handle it. But when we have an injury timeout or bathroom break and it happens and it interferes with the flow of the match, the players should give a one game, 1 point, 2 point, whatever, they should give a courtesy to the opponent for breaking momentum. I now call bathroom breaks power outage breaks, power outage momentum breaks, because everyone can identify these days with what happened at the Super Bowl last year, how the Ravens, the Baltimore Ravens, were in definite charge of the game, and you have a 25-minute power outage break, you come back, and they darn near lost that game, though all the momentum changed. Folks, momentum is the underlying most powerful thing that we have in our sport. The scoring system breeds momentum to be, makes momentum very important. The timing of how long you have to change sides has important to do with it. But the importance of momentum is that you are always riding the high of a wave that is going with you or a wave that is crashing against you, and you're always trying to manage this. And it takes an incredible amount of time to learn as a player how to manage momentum and how to go through the steps that it takes to know how to ride all of the ups and the downs before you finally win. And to not even acknowledge this and to allow bathroom breaks or injury, fake injuries, to really change the momentum of a match is ludicrous. It is awful. It shows that some administrator does not understand the game. It shows that analytical people are looking at it in a way of a way that is so elementary that tennis is forehands and backhands. Forehands and backhands are just a base. Then the scoring system is so brilliant. It's so brilliant where you have to win 3 points in a row instead of just, and you have to learn how to group points, that the people who mess with this just do not understand the game. So think about this. You might say, well, what if the person's really injured? Look, if it's an acute injury, that's one thing. But most players will take the court with a chronic injury that's a sore shoulder, sore knee, sore elbow, sore something. They take the court. If they take the court with a chronic injury, they should have to finish the match out without getting breaks. That's just absolutely ludicrous because it kills momentum, and it's so unfair to allow these power outage momentum breaks. So there's a difference between acute injuries and chronic injuries. You know, even if they would make that discernment, that decision that there is a difference, it would make a difference. It would be tremendous help to what's going on. But the game, it would cut down on the gamesmanship and everything else. And I'm sorry, the age I am, I've been in tennis 50 years now. So I have never, ever, ever had to leave the tennis court for a bathroom break to use the bathroom. So again, it's just ridiculous that the kids will take these bathroom breaks to kill momentum. And they're pretty smart, and they're savvy about it, but they really are not taking the breaks for a good reason. Proposal number 6, no ad scoring should never be used in tennis competition. Again, it is not a rule of tennis. We need to play full matches. But I wanted to point this out, that the most important heirloom that we have is our scoring system. You must win 3 points in a row to win a game of tennis. If you do not win the first point of the game, you must win 3 in a row, or you must win 4 out of 5. The only way out of that is that if you win the first point and you roll some points out, you can win 2 and then 1, you know, lose 1 and then win 2. But you have to, if you don't win the first point of the game, you have to win 3 in a row or 4 out of 5, always. Therefore, our children are not learning how to play the game if they use this no-ad scoring. And believe me, I saw a lot of careers go down the tubes because in no-ad scoring, you only had to win 1 point. The opponent wins one, you win one, they win one, you win one, they win one. And I think I had 6. Yep. And then whoever won the last one, you might have to win 2 in a row. But really, you could win by winning 1 point in a row. So the lesser players upset a lot of the good players. Our best players took a lot of losses. Again, we keep the cream from rising and we bring them back into a pool, therefore causing a bigger pool of mediocre players. And our problem is not that we don't have a lot of mediocrity. We have a lot of very, very, very excellent mediocrity in most of our players. We're looking, why are our champions not becoming the top champions? In the 18 and under age group, we have been taking, can you believe this? We've been taking a 10-minute break at Kalamazoo after the second set. And it is laughable. Once again, they are worried about a player getting too hot or something like this, but we've taken the element completely out. We've taken the element of conditioning. And again, the momentum breaking, the power, we've created a 10-minute power outage break. Could you imagine playing a football game and getting down into second half like the Super Bowl and then they turn the lights out on purpose? That's exactly what we're doing to tennis matches, and therefore, again, we're not allowing momentum to be treated as one of the most important factors and most powerful force in sports. So proposal number 8. I'm going to give credit to Coach Randy Blumenthal, Indiana University. Brilliant coach at Indiana University, came up with this. He says, look, kids need a self-promotion or self-propelled way of advancing up the ladder. We have several hundreds and thousands of kids playing tennis, but they don't become tennis players. He said, how about having a gold, silver, and bronze system? Okay, so what he said, the gold system, you rank maybe only 50 players, only 60, maybe 75, and they're ranked. But do not rank 300 or 400 or 500 just because we have computers. That's stupid. A kid who's ranked 456, we're supposed to get excited because he moved to number 321. Well, he moved up 120 spots, but nobody pays attention to that. So in the U.S. rankings, we should have only rank about 75. We could start 75. Then he said 76, and it should be done on a head-to-head basis for competition. A head-to-head basis, not a point structure. Now, 76 to 400, there's your mediocre group, and you know what? The point system does a good job of breeding mediocrity. That's where they ought to use maybe the point system. Kids could play points and just try to get their ranking up. So his idea was 1 to 75 head-to-head system, the old star rating. 76 to 400 should be you could do the point system that we're doing right now. But here's the brilliance. He said your local tournaments, your high school tournaments and those, make those self-advanced, make them a point system you call the bronze ratings, where kids could work to try to get rankings through high school matches, through local matches, through entry-level matches into that top. They could work, and when they get enough points, they could earn their way into the silver system, which is it's the gold, silver, and the bronze. Now, in that entry level also, I wanted to point out Aaron Fox out there in California with the GRIPS program.com, folks. GRIPS program.com. If you want your kids 10 and unders or just entry level to be excited about tennis, they're doing a karate belt type of program with GRIPS. Aaron Fox, GRIPS program.com. Check out this program on the internet, and your kids will be able to self-advance and be able to propel themselves into higher groups. Folks, wanted to thank, we're about out of time today, but Dr. Jim Poole, just fascinating man and just a tremendous way of looking at motivation in our kids that might we used to think maybe we needed to dumb down with medicine, the ADD and stuff. He's calling it fast brain. He's talking to the king and the queen in our children. Go back also to January 2nd of 2013, listen to the whole show with Jim Poole. But we thank you for listening.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family. Never pass that
Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. See you next week, folks. See you at noon on Wednesday. American Tennis. This is Chuck Creasy.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.